When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to a post-T2 week of hot tennis action, pre-eclipse edition of Advantage Connors. Coming to you, two co-hosts, Jimmy and Brett Connors, and Isabella. She's right here on the doggy bed. How are you, Pops? What's going on?
She better be with you. She's not going to leave you alone, that's for sure. I'm good. Everything's good. You've had a busy week, I know. Been working hard and taking care of a lot of the tennis. And I've been in Santa Barbara, which is not so bad. But, you know, we've been getting some pretty crazy weather up here. We've had a lot of rain again. We've had a lot of wind, 25, 30 mile an hour winds. The other day, Brett, you can't believe it, we had sleet in our yard. We drove in our driveway and looked around, and I said, what's all this white? And it was sleet. It was unbelievable. It was cold and windy and rainy. And so the
hail.
Weather here in Santa Barbara, it's a good place to, you know, maybe don't come now if you're coming on vacation. Wait for a bit.
Yeah, I saw that. Mom sent me the picture of it looked like little like ice cubes, like little round, you know, the good kind of ice. If you can find one of those ice machines at a gas station that gives you the little round balls of ice, it looked like someone had spilled over a giant cup of that in the yard.
I saved a cup for when you come up for your Diet Coke.
Perfect. Nice.
Got one ready. But yeah, it's been crazy up here, but it's been good. I've, you know, gotten a little golf in, not much tennis because you know, the courts have gotten a lot of rain, so they've been trying to take care of those and get them back into shape, the clay courts I'm talking about. And played a little golf, which is good, but it's awful tough in the wind for me to play. But yeah, it's been a good week, and it's good to be back on with you again.
Yep. Yeah, it's been a good week here. Still flying solo, Isabella and I. So she's been the MVP of the week. Dad has been going to work early in the morning for some T2 action. T2 is doing pretty well. The secondary channel on Tennis Channel, I know we talk about it once in a while, but it's starting to blow up. It's in a ton of new homes because it's on, you know, all these different, you know, platforms, Roku and YouTube TV and Samsung TV and all that stuff. So working that, had some long days with my man Gil Gross and Ari Wolf. They were calling the tennis. We had a lot of fun. But Bella was by herself most of the time, most of the day, having some long days alone. So she's been kind of mad at me. You know, I would come home, take her out for like an hour, you know, do some stuff, feed her. Then I got to get ready for bed, take her out one more time. And then she's looking at me like, we're getting in bed. You know, I've been in bed all day. You know, like what's going on here? So I got off.
Pretty smooth with you though, Brad. She understands, and you know, here's another thing. You're going to take a little break here coming up, and your little golden doodle Isabella is going to come and spend a couple of weeks with Grandma and Grandpa and our little Bogey,
brother Bogey. So,
yeah, we're gonna have her for a bit, which will be fun. So she'll have some good running room here and Bogey to run around with. So she'll get plenty of exercise.
Yep.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we got off today and came and just picked her right up. I left the car running out front, came and got her, and we went to West Wolf. That's with an F park. It's a good park right near right where we live, and she went crazy in squirrel patrol for about 90 minutes, and I just sat there my phone and we walked in figure eights around the park and just took our time and enjoyed ourselves. So how's everything up there, Mom? Good?
You need that a little bit yourself too, by the way. You've been working pretty hard in early hours, and you know, to get out and get some fresh air and chill a little bit yourself is a good thing too. So,
yeah, definitely need to move.
You got a good partner to do it with.
Yep, definitely need to move the legs. You know, you come home, you're tired because you've been watching tennis and your eyes are open, all these monitors and everything. But then you realize, you know, you've barely moved. You've like got up to go to the bathroom like maybe twice in like 9 or 10 hours or something. So you're like, maybe I should go actually like burn a calorie or two here.
Yeah, not a bad thing. Yeah, well, we haven't talked in a week. You've been busy, and you know, our hours are different. But I know you got to have something on your mind. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I thought we'd maybe just, I know it's late now in the week, but maybe wrap up Miami. We kind of previewed the final weekend, but maybe talk a little bit about the winners. Danielle Collins, the surprise story, coming through, beating Rybakina in convincing fashion. Didn't lose a set the whole tournament. Won in straights. Wasn't even ranked, and took it down. And then our man Jannik Sinner took down Demi. Demi put up a good effort getting to the final, but Sinner's just too much this year. I mean, he's only lost once. He has one loss to Carlos in Indian Wells, and he just keeps chugging along. So what did you think about the way Miami shook out?
Yeah, I was kind of happy to see Danielle Collins and her coming through, because there's been, a lot of talk about, what her future is going to be in tennis and how she's going to handle that. And, you know, she came through and played really well throughout the course of the whole week. Maybe that's been a good thing. It's taken a lot of pressure off of her. And, you know, she came out and she knows what her future is going to be. And she just cut loose and played and came out and really had a great tournament, not losing a set and beating the players that she did along the way was in convincing fashion was pretty spectacular. And then also the question comes up, are you going to change your mind about, your plans for the future? And she seems very mature in her decision on what she wants to do. Like we've talked about before, Brett, there's a lot of life after this life, to live and a lot of exciting things that can take place there too. Even though tennis has been a big part of her life and it probably still will, down the road, but maybe not at this level, but will always be a part of her life in some way. It's a good memory to look back on and remember the 2 weeks that she had in Miami. So, it was great to see that for her.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the Americans, I mean, this shows you the depth of the Americans, especially on the women's side right now, where everyone talks Pegula and golf, and you got Keys and other players. And then who wins it? It's Collins. I know a couple years ago they asked her, or it came out at the US Open when she was winning a match, that her dad had kind of patterned her backhand after you. So I always think about that when I watch her now, just because she's just been ripping her ground strokes, running people into the corners back and forth, just crushing. And she's continued it this week. I kept waiting for her to hey man, she's going to have a letdown. Like, that's the biggest emotional high she's ever had. She has to travel and go to Miami and reset. And nope. She's just kept chugging along, and she's into the semifinals tomorrow. I think, she'll play Sakari, I think, for a chance to get to the finals for another title.
How about that?
Yeah.
Maybe the decision she made was, it's kind of cleared her mind a little bit. And, like I said, taking a little bit of the pressure off and we always say, Brett, that there's nothing like winning, to give you that confidence. And, coming off a tournament like winning in Miami and staying on that roll, staying on that high and having that mindset, that confidence that you've shown yourself and you've shown the world that you can do it. So why not keep it up? Good for her. I hope it continues for the whole year for her like that. And whether it does or not, I really doesn't make a difference, but it would be good to see, her stay on top and keep this run going. It'd be fun to see.
I agree. I got a follow up on that. You said about the confidence. She's got a funny video that people have been playing the last couple weeks about her. It was in Australia, I don't know when, a year or two ago. And she ends her press conference and they're talking and she says something laughingly, I think I'm the best at everything I do, And then she's like, even if I'm not, I still think I do, or something like that. And then she just laughs, just joking. But it's true, with tennis, because you don't have any team. Sure, you have your coaches and stuff like that, but you're out there by yourself. You can't call timeouts. There's not offense and defense where you can rest and that kind of stuff. So you have to believe in yourself to this extreme overconfidence, to where you have to come off super cocky to probably the average person when you're talking about like competition. But like, if you don't have that, like you're never going to be one of the greats, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Listen, sometimes you've even got to bluff that, you know, even if you're not playing well or not, you still got to walk in with that swagger, that cockiness, you know, to, you know, so you don't want, you know, your opponents to ever see that you're down on yourself, whether on the court or off the court. So, you know, that attitude that she has, you know, whether you're not, you know, as long as you're out there giving it everything you got, you know, from the very first point or from the minute you wake up or, you know, the minute you walk in the office, or it's whatever you're doing, as long as you're giving it everything you've got to give, you know, why not think you're the best? Why not? I mean, because nobody's going to instill that confidence in you better than you. You know, that's what I always thought. I mean, that's why I never looked up to the box or hardly ever looked up to the box. I wasn't looking for somebody to help me with my tennis. I was looking to see who was up there, you know. Yeah. But because nobody could do that for me. I had to instill that in myself and give myself that confidence of, you know, whether I was winning or whether I was losing, I was trying to stay as positive as I could. Because, you know, I've always said, Brett, you never know what's going to happen to change the direction of a match. You know, one point, one yell, one line call, one this, one that, you know, can change anything. But yeah, I mean, if you're not believing in yourself, you know, take a seat, you know, because there's a lot of the other players out there in all sports and all walks of life who, you know, who think they can't make a mistake. And, right. and sometimes that's hard to beat.
Right. And then talk to me a little bit about center.
I'm going to say just quickly, he's going to do nothing but get better.
Right.
I think he's got a lot of room to improve. He's proven that, and, you know, with his work ethic and the way he's going about it. But man, if he just keeps on this road, wow, he's had a great year already. What do you think is going to happen, you know, for the rest of the year? If he stays on this road and continues his work ethic and the confidence that he has in his game and everything,
right.
You know, his movement and his shot selection and
coming to net. He's getting more comfortable at net. Yeah.
But don't you think his mental attitude is something that's changed a lot in the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months?
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, I'm going back again that, you know, he believes now that he can win. And he's proven that, he proved that towards the end of last year. And with that, he has just kind of rolled that over into the beginning of this year, starting with the Australian Open. Don't you think that was a big part of it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, at the U.S. Open, he had the big match, the big win, and then he ended up losing to, I think, Zverev, beat him, where he kind of wore down a little bit physically. But then you're right, man. This year, he's 22-1 with 3 titles, right? So he's already got that. He's only lost once. But since the fall of last year, since the China Open, he's got 5 titles because he won the China Open and he won Vienna. And he also won the Davis Cup at the end of the year. So, like, he's on fire. And I think you're right. I think just something started to click. You know, he started, you know, Darren Cahill came on and probably has had, like, really good influence on something there because, you know, about a year before he, you know, started clicking, he came on and started making probably some changes and working on stuff with him. And like, he's, you know, someone asked us a question like last week or this week, and they said, can Sinner be number one? It's like, well, he's already number two.
Right.
You know, I think
he doesn't have far to go, does he?
Right. I think there's definitely potential to move up like one spot, you know, like the rest of his whole career, you know. So I mean, it's fun to watch because, like, this is kind of the stuff we've been talking about. And, you know, you see, you know, spats of where you'd see, you know, he wins this week or he plays 2 or 3 amazing matches in a row and then maybe doesn't win the tournament. But now it seems like he's putting all the pieces together. You know, he picks up his second Masters 1000 of his career. You know, winning Miami, you know, wins his first Grand Slam, and now he's number two. And, you know, you can definitely see that, you know, it's going to be him and Alcaraz going back and forth, you know, for a long time, man. It seems like it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's a good rivalry. Yeah. And I think, I always believe that sports needs a real rivalry, and it seems like that's the one now that's taking over for, you know, the three guys that have been on top for such a long time, that this new rivalry with Sinner, Alcaraz, I don't know. You want to put Rune in there?
I feel like Sarah? You can't yet. Like, I mean, yeah, he's the same age and has a lot of potential, but I mean, you know, he's got to start winning and being a lot more consistent. You know, like he's a little raw compared to them. Like I want to put him in it as far as potential, but right now it seems like those two guys are a little bit of head and shoulders above everybody else around them.
Well, that's actually a good point. That would be a good goal for Rune to look at. And you know, what's it going to take for him to break into that?
Right.
You know, into like they had Federer and Nadal and Joker, and now you can have Alcaraz, Sinner, and who's next? Who's going to be the third now?
Right. Like there's that spot sitting there open. Like, hey, who's going to take it? Who's going to take these two spots? Like with, you know, Murray too, with the, you know, kind of like the big four, all those guys pushing each other. But yeah, man, Sinner's fun to watch. Like he's got his serves gotten better. He's always had, the thing I like watching is just like his wrists are so like whippy. Like the way he's able to just turn the ball over, you know, like the way he can just do it and like steer it to dip like right low when someone's at net, and he's got the same thing when he gets low on the backhand. It's impressive to watch because he's got like a different look. Like him and Alcaraz are such different styles, like body styles, looks, personalities, game style. And that's what makes it so cool to see when they play, is I think it's so different.
Yep. I think he's going to do nothing but get better if he stays on this track. And you know, right now you can't say, why change anything? Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, and always, you know, trying to little improvements along the way. But as long as you keep doing what you're doing, whoever is doing it has got him on the right track to be number one, and winning Grand Slams like he just won in Australia back in January, and now the French and Wimbledon and U.S. Open coming up for the rest of this year. It's going to be a fun follow to see him and how it shakes out for him towards the end of the year.
Yeah, what do you think about, because now we go to the clay, and he's had success on clay, but not as much nearly as on hard court. What do you think, you know, what would you do? Or what would you think about, like, you know, if you knew that about yourself, and like now everything's clicking, and now you have to move to this other surface? Because I saw, you know, a quote he was kind of talking about, you know, because he just plays Miami. And then, you know, he travels, gets to Monte Carlo the Thursday or something before the event starts. And then he has like 1 week essentially to start playing on the new surface.
Well, going from hard courts to clay, you would think that would be a big change. And it is not so much with, I don't think, with the way the ball bounces. I think most of the courts, whether it's hard courts or grass or whatever, kind of bounce the same, you know, but it's the movement that's going to be a bit different. You know, the sliding on the clay, and you know, the way you run, and the way you after you make contact with the ball, the way you change directions and so forth was always the big part for me. Different for guys. They play more tournaments on clay, and I'd play over here in the States, and you know, maybe I'd go over, you know, the week before the French and play on the clay and then play the tournament. I wasn't one for going and playing way too many tournaments on the clay, but you know, the way it is now and the schedule that they have, you can, you know, go and play a tournament, play, you know, whatever, but I'll still get your rest and be prepared for the French on the clay, because you know as well as anybody, Brett, that those matches are grueling on the clay, and the points, as long as the points are on hard courts, you know, you can just, you know, almost say, well, you know, we better sit back and, you know, just relax, because it's the matches are longer. And so conditioning is going to be a big part of it. Rest is going to be a big part of it. Keeping your game up. So it's going to be important to have whoever is in your camp understand, you know, what it's going to take to, you know, to kind of make all of that go into one package and prepare you for, you know, for the tournaments over there, because it's the next, 3 months, we're April, May, June,
pretty much,
and into July. The next 3 months are grueling.
Yeah.
Because you have the French, and then you go right to the grass, which is, you know, a different kind of movement and a different kind of mental attitude. And, you know, Wimbledon is different. And, you know, so, you know, the next 3 months are pressurized, not only physically, but mentally too.
Yeah. And I think it's just one of those things with him where, like, the results are going to come, you know, like he doesn't have the same maybe success as he had in other, on other surfaces, but then, you know. Now all of a sudden it's clicked. It's going to be interesting to see Sinner go through the clay season now, like as this new version of himself, and then we can kind of sit back and judge it. Where I feel like we're judging the old version of him on clay. Where like he's not that player anymore. We know. So how's it going to look, you know, after these next 2.5 months?
Yeah, but I wasn't just talking about him in that. I'm talking about all the players.
No, I know, but that's what I was just talking about.
Yeah, I get it, but. You know, but obviously he's proven himself on the course down in Australia, and he's proven himself on the gritty courts of Palm Springs and the faster course, you know, a little bit faster, maybe down in Miami. So, you know, obviously his game is travels,
mm-hmm.
you know, and isn't that what we always talk about on the golf course? You know, I don't want to be a one course player. I like my game to travel so I can play decent, you know, on every course I play. And,
right.
and that seems to be his game, his tennis game right now. He's ready for anything, I think.
Yeah. You want to say when you say your handicap, you want to say you're like a traveling blank. Cause that way you feel confident knowing like, hey, I pretty much like can shoot this any course I go to. Cause a lot of people are just, you know, they have their handicap and it's probably on their home course. You know, like everyone right. likes to keep their handicap on the course they play every day and know every little nook and cranny of, you know?
So, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
but, yeah. So
what do you think?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, staying with Monte Carlo real quick, did you see Rafa pulled out? I know we talk about it kind of every week and kind of say the same thing, but just kind of a bummer because we're thinking, well, maybe he's just skipping the hard court season and, you know, resting up for the clay. He's obviously going to want to play the clay to get ready for the French, but now you see him start, you know, pulling out of clay court events, it starts to be a little more worrisome.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing worse than playing hurt. Or you know, because that takes away everything. It takes away your movement. It takes away you hit your shots. It takes away your attitude towards the way you want to play and the kind of game you want to play against your opponent. And you're always hedging if you're not fully confident in your health and your movement and everything. So I don't know. I mean it. Yeah, he came over and he was going to play Palm Springs, but he stopped and played an event in Vegas. Did he hurt himself there and didn't realize it? Or is he just preparing for the French? I mean, you know, far be it for me to try to get into anybody's mind and what they're thinking, but I do know one thing: playing hurt is no fun.
Yeah,
and especially as you get older you know, and if you're not careful, you can even do more damage, and you don't want to do that. So, you know, he's got the people around him, and you know, Rafa's been around long enough. He knows himself better than anybody. You know what he feels like, and nobody should make that decision but him. And I'm sure he'll do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. But the weird part is like we keep thinking. Like, okay, he's hurt. And then he kind of teases he's coming back, like after he pulled out of Miami. And then a couple days later, he put a video up where he's like hitting the clay off of his shoes, kind of like, you know, insinuating, like, I'm practicing on the clay. I'll be ready for the clay, you know. And then now he pulls out. But then, like, the last week or so, there's been a lot of videos online of him hitting. And he looks like he's hitting pretty good. Like, he's hitting it pretty freaking hard. And it's a practice session, you know. But I mean, you can't tell what he's feeling, but it's a bummer, you know, like it,
yeah,
because you're thinking like, has he played his last time in Monte Carlo? Has he played or as we go, are these the last, are we never going to see him again at these tournaments? You know, like, is this his last go through of the calendar? And every time he pulls out, it's like, oop, I'm never going to, you know, play there again.
I know how difficult it is to let go. You know, no matter what, you try to do anything to stay around and do what you've done at the top of the game for so long and been so successful at. And you know, sometimes it's tough to let go. I mean, in any sport, you know, or in any in any job, in any walk of life, or whatever, and you know that you've done so well, and you're willing to try anything, you know, to stay with it and to continue to be a part of it, you know. But with the success, you know, that he has, I mean, there's no obviously there's no looking back and saying, I wish I would have done something. You know, I'm sure he's done everything he's ever gotten in the game to do. And taking care of your health, I guess, comes down to, you know, making that decision. Yeah. You know, do I want to go out and continue to play and maybe hurt myself worse and, you know, screw things up somewhere, you know, as I get older, and it's going to affect me more then, you know, or is it better to say, I've had a good run. I don't know. Far be it. I'm not trying to get into his mind and basically, you know, there's not enough room for both of us in there anyway. So,
I wonder if he's just like, hey man, I'm not going to play unless I'm 100%. Like, I feel like there might.
And I don't blame him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't blame him at 36, 7 years old.
But I just mean, like, I think we're used to, you know, most people are like, you know, I wasn't 100%. And like, the old cliche is like, well, no one's ever 100%, right? You know, like the tennis season's long and it's this coming and going of I'm healthy, I'm not healthy, I'm a little hurt, I'm better, I'm, you know, whatever it is. And like in the past 15 years, we know a Rafa that'll probably play through a lot of stuff, you know, that'll probably give it his all, even if he's not 100%. I think now, like you're saying, since it's the end and it's this last time and he's got, you know, whatever injury it is, and the risk of hurting it more at his age and stuff like that, that I think he might just be like, look, I'm going to take it in a tournament by tournament basis. And if I don't feel like 100%, I'm not going to go.
I you can't argue with that.
Yeah. You know,
it's his decision. It's his, you know, it's his body, you know, and not only now, but, you know, for the next 50 years, you know, right. Or whatever. You know, and believe me, I and it doesn't get any easier living in that body the older you get.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying that from experience, you know, but, you know, looking back, I mean, and I'm sure he'll, you know, anybody who's done it at that level for that long and had that success, you look back and say, you know, start me over. I'll do it all just the same way.
Yeah.
Do it again, you know, because, you know, it just goes, you know, the scars are worth it. You know, it just means you weren't sitting on the couch playing video games.
Yeah.
You know, not that that's a bad thing. You know, don't be calling in now and complaining.
What I think. I think that he's probably going to try and, because you always say it, he's aiming for the French Open. If this is his last run, he's probably aiming for the French Open. And then obviously the Olympics are in Paris. We always say it. So he's probably aiming for those, right? Those are his goal. So I think he's probably going to try and play like one or two events, right? Like maybe at least one leading into the French. It's going to be tough to just cold show up at the French Open and try and win it. If anyone can do it, it would be him. But you know what I mean? Like maybe he tries to play Rome or like maybe Madrid or, you know, and then, you know, gets one, you know, gets a few matches under a belt, maybe wins it or whatever. And then at least, you know, like, hey, I've got some matches. I'm ready to go for the French and for the Olympics. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's throw out this scenario. What happens if he goes and he wins the French? Do you think he plays the Olympics?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You do? You think
so?
Well,
you mean instead of like riding off into the sunset, but it's hard not to when it's there in Paris.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that horse is saddled, we could put a lot of scenarios out there. I mean, how good would that be?
Yeah, to walk off in the sunset like that.
Yeah. Yeah, to take that ride, but you know, but he's you know, but if he hits that stride and is able to, you know, even have a good showing in the French, you know, and play that well, then I'm sure that he'll look forward to the Olympics. But yep. I'm like I said, I'm not getting in his mind, but you know, I hope that you know, whatever decision he makes, he's the one that makes it and he's happy with it.
Agree. Well said.
We're driven by the search for better. So when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global visitors monthly, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I really love about Indeed is it makes hiring easy. If you don't want to waste a lot of time searching for the right candidates, just go to Indeed. They got everything you want all in one spot. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Here's my favorite part. Listeners to this show, Advantage Conners, get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job even more visibility at Indeed.com/Conners. That's right. Just go to Indeed.com/Conners right now and support our show, Advantage Conners, by saying you heard it here on our podcast. Indeed.com/Conners. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Get unparalleled access to job seekers with over 350 million unique visitors globally, according to Indeed data, and extended reach through Glassdoor. All right, guys, let's talk about something that we don't always discuss here on the podcast, personal hygiene, right? That sounds fun. But let's be realistic. Nobody wants to smell like a zero. Nobody wants to stink. And I've recently started using a new product. It's called Mando. It's deodorant, it's lotion, it's soap, everything that you need to keep yourself smelling good. And I mean, it's been proven. People who use Mando whole body deodorant, which is what I like, the Mount Fuji smell. I love the Mount Fuji. They used that in their pits. They had an odor score of 0 out of 10 after 12 hours. After your long day at work, 0 out of 10. No stank. People who only used regular soap and showered alone had a stunk of 8 out of 10 after 12 hours, which is stinky. So introducing Mando from the makers of Lumi deodorant. They've got me hooked up. I've been using them now for over a month. It's clinically proven. All the different things that they use, it's healthy for you. It doesn't have a lot of the bad stuff that all these other brands have. Keeps you smelling good for 72 hours wherever you stink. Your armpits, down low in your feet, you know, everywhere you can think of. You got some folds, you got some crotch, whatever you got, Mando will have you covered. So make the switch to Mando whole body deodorant and smell like a zero every day. Here's the special offer you get for Advantage Conners. New customers get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code and link. What I love best about Mando is that it's so different from all the other brands out there. It's super safe to use anywhere on your body. It's created by a doctor who firsthand knew BO more than anybody and was misdiagnosed and mistreated, so he came up with his own way to do it. It's clinically proven, like I said, to block for 72 hours. That's a long time, 3 days. pH balance for safe use below the belt. That's what I'm talking about, fellas. You know what I mean. All right, guys, here's my favorite part. Special offer for only the listeners of this podcast, Advantage Conners. New customers get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code and link. Use code, it's a tough one, guys, Conners, C-O-N-N-O-R-S, at shopmando.com. Use code Conners at shopmando.com. And mention this podcast. It helps us out a lot. We love you guys and we want you to smell good. All right, let's get back to the show.
All right, let's move on to something I know you're going to like. You know what next week is? It's April, okay?
Yeah.
April means Masters Golf. And technically, this will be our preview episode since our next episode will come on next Friday and the tournament will already be going. So let's just take a little dip dive into the first major of the year on the PGA Tour. It's kind of my favorite in a way. I like watching the US Open and the British, obviously, but there's something about the Masters. It's such a fun open course and guys can bomb it and sets up for such creative shots. So what are you thinking? I got the odds right here. What's going on in your mind going into this this tournament?
Well, yeah, you know me. I'm a golf junkie, so I'll be well connected in watching the Masters, and and spending a lot of time in front of the TV, but after I get my own golf in too, by the way. So
you got to get the Masters app. The Masters app is like the best app ever for if you love sports and you love golf, because you can put it on your iPad. I'll download it for you if I come up there. Put it on your iPad and you can sit there and select four different holes or cameras or groups to follow. And then throughout the day, you can just, punch and select and put up whatever you want. You can watch every shot per hole from each player. It's pretty cool.
You're going to have to connect me into that.
I will.
And set me up so I can do that.
But, okay.
You know what my first thought is? First of all, I love watching the Masters too. But, the two tours now. You know, the Live Tour players and the PGA players. And, here's a bet. We'll throw out this bet. Who's going to win the Masters, a Live player or a PGA player? There's a bet.
I like that.
Look at the guys. Scottie Scheffler has had an amazing year. He's coming off, winning two tournaments in a row and almost three tournaments and playing great golf. And, Rory McIlroy and, a lot of the great young players that are out there now that are making a name for themselves on the PGA Tour. And then, the Live players, Koepka and Rahm and Cameron Smith and,
Dustin Johnson.
We can go down Dustin Johnson and Sergio Garcia and, we can name
DeChambeau.
A lot of the players there. And so it's going to be interesting to see, who comes off and wins, because the PGA players are playing week in and week out. The Live Tour schedule is not as demanding, is it?
No, it's not. And then they only play 3 days, and there's not as many events. But I'm sure those guys are still grinding away on the range and everything. Here's a question for you. Who won the Masters last year? Mm-hmm. Was it a LIV player or a PGA player?
Who won it last year?
Rahm. It's just a joke. It's a quick trick question, because he was a PGA last year and now he's a LIV guy.
He was a PGA player last year. You're right. That's right. You caught me.
I got you.
It's late, Brad. I'm past my bedtime.
I'll go through some of the odds here, and you pick out three, four, five names. And I'll pick out four names, and then we'll see how they play out. Okay. I'll start at the top. Scottie Scheffler. I love this guy. He's great, but it's crazy to think that he's 5-1, that he's that much of a favorite. He's 5-1. Rory McIlroy, who's never won the Masters, is second favorite. Every year he's first or second favorite. He's 10-1. Last year's winner, Rahm, 13-1. Koepka, who I like, who always shows up for the Masters and has not won a Masters. I'm sorry, always shows up for the majors and has not won a Masters yet, is a pretty good value there at 21-1. Jordan Spieth, your guy, he shows up usually at the Masters, 21-1. Here's a guy I like, Will Zalatoris. I think he's destined to win a slam, a Grand Slam at some point. It's just waiting to happen. He's going to do it. It's just a matter of when. Victor Hovland, I know you like him. I like him too. 21-1.
I like him.
Schauffele, 24-1.
I like him too.
Here's a guy I'm interested to see how he plays. I don't know if he can. I think he could win. Ludvig, our guy, Ludvig Åberg, the Swede, the big Swede. Cantley's 28-1. Justin Thomas, 28-1. Cam Smith and Hideki, Morikawa, Niemann, and Clark are all 31-1. And then you get DJ at 36-1. I mean, that's decent value for a guy always does well there. Finau, 44. Homa, 44. Cameron Young. I think if he's going to win a slam, it would be the British, but he bombs it off the tee. You got Jason Day, 46. DeChambeau, 46. What jumps out to you out of all those names?
Man, the odds are pretty high. I hate to ask where Tiger is.
Is he even going to play? Is he playing?
Yeah.
There he is. 160-1. That's worth a fiver, flyer fiver, right. Friendly fiver.
Heck yeah. Just for nostalgia's sake.
Right. Just to have something to root on.
It's interesting that nobody, Scheffler is as well as he's been playing and everything is 5-1. What was Tiger when he was playing well? Even money?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. But, I mean, you got to look at the guys, you know, who are the good putters. If you don't have the touch and the feel and the confidence to make those putts, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. But I don't know. I like Hovland, the way I like Scheffler. Shoffley.
Yeah,
I think he shows up in for a lot of the big tournaments also. So I think there's good value there. I was looking at Justin Thomas. I thought his game was starting to come along a little bit. He had lost a little confidence, I think, but his game is starting to shape up a little bit, so he could do some damage. Then you look at guys like, you know, Rahm and Koepka Scheffler and McIlroy. I mean, you know, look at all the big names that are now going to be joined in to play the same tournament. So, you know, you don't really have any feel on how they match up against each other because they haven't been playing together.
Right. So, how about last year's runner-up Phil Mickelson at 160-1 himself? I mean, that's really worth a fiver. I mean, I know he's getting older and everything, but dude, he just contended last year, you know, like, and he always does well. This is one of those tournaments where, like, remember, like, Freddie would contend. Like, Freddie, into his, like, 50s or whatever, would always come out and have, like, a day or two and hang till Friday, you know, in the afternoon, then maybe fall off on the weekend. But, like, it's one of those courses that sets up to certain guys, you know, like, it just whatever it is about it that you know, the big draw, and it's a little more wide open. So what do you think?
Here's a name I'm going to throw out real quick. Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Let me look where he is.
He's and he's a great putter.
36-1, Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys, man. Like, you realize the cool thing in a way about the split of the tours is that it's forced these new guys on the PGA Tour to, you know, them to promote guys, and new guys have had to, you know, more opportunities and chances to make a name. But I was talking to, you know, our talent Ari Wolf this week about the golf. Just we were talking the Masters, and he's like, you know, we got to do something about it. Like, eventually they have to combine and get back, because it's kind of lame not to have the best golfers in the world kind of competing with each other all the time, you know, like, you know, we've been talking about it for a couple of years and they've signed the deal and all this stuff. It's like, was there eventually going to be more tournaments where all these guys are playing? It's not like just we look forward to these four, you know, majors a year, and then we go, you know, back to our room. Hey, you go to your room, you go to your room and play your golf, and we'll see you again in a couple months.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, far be it for me to know, you know, what that's going to take to do that. But, man, yeah, it is showcasing new stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's given a lot of great opportunities to a lot of these young guys coming up. And I mean, even some older guys, you know, to be first time winners, you know, on the PGA Tour. And you know, as you know, I mean, that's a life changing experience. To accomplish that. And, you know, so, you know, I also know how easy it is to forget names, you know, with new names coming up, how easy it is to, you know, out with the old and in with the new, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's going to step up,
right,
you know, and show their stuff, you know, over the next, the next four rounds of golf at Augusta. So, it's going to be fun to watch, you know, young guys, you know, older guys that have been around that have won it before, you know, how are they going to perform, or you know, and the young guys, are the nerves going to take over, just their first time playing at Augusta, and, you know, everything that goes on around there, the excitement and, you know, the tradition and everything that's a part of that and how they handle it. So, it's going to be interesting to see, and you know, I'll be watching. I like watching it.
Yep. All right. Here's my names I'm throwing out. I'm taking Koepka, Zalatoris, Ludvig Åberg.
Nice.
Dun 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 dun. How about a little Dustin Johnson at 36-1? I always want to believe in Finau, but I just don't know if he's got the putting for those greens. But Cameron Young, I'll throw him out there. And I like Sahith Theegala. I feel like he's still a couple years away from maybe realistically winning, but man, he's got such a sweet swing and he can bomb it too. Pepperdine. Like, he played at Pepperdine here, so I've known about him for a few years.
Yeah. Well, that's five or six pretty good choices.
Yep.
I think I'd throw Fitzpatrick in there,
mm-hmm.
and Xander Schauffele. He always seems to show up for big events too. He plays pretty well in a lot of the big events.
And Scheffler will be in the mix. Scheffler can like play a bad day and still somehow shoot himself into the contention, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Scheffler and the other guy, Victor Hovland, I like.
Yeah. I like him. He's funny, man. He's got a good personality. I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. He's got a commercial out with wedges, and it says how, you know, working on your game, you know, they thought you didn't have a good short game. They didn't think mine was good either, you know, so.
Yeah, and he's doing all right.
He had to work on his short game, and now he's come up. He's, one of the best short games out there. So, yeah I think we got, eight or nine pretty good picks there that would be fun to watch.
Yep. All right, let's go on to the Q&A. I mean, some of these have been your questions. I've just been weaving them in. But let's go on to some other ones here to wrap up the evening. How about that?
That sounds good.
All right, here's an easy one. How long, when you were playing a tournament, how long would you warm up before a match?
Well, if I played the match in the evening, I would go in the morning. I'd get up and get going. I'd want to get going, get moving, and I'd go to the stadium and I'd play in the morning and probably play 45 minutes, 30-40 minutes, something like that, and you know, get a sweat and I'm not working on anything. I'm just loosening up and, you know, trying to keep what I've been doing pretty good that way. Just staying on it. And then I'd go back and I'd hang in the room, which, you know, I guess most everybody does. And I'd have a little room service and take it easy in the afternoon and go over and play. But I would never go to my evening match and go warm up again. I felt that I was ready to play. I'd go and hang out in the locker room. I'd get ready to play and organize. But I would never hang around the locker room for 2 hours or 3 hours before my match. I'd try to get there as close to match time as possible so that I wouldn't have time to just hang around and get flat. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to go in and stay up and excited about walking out there and playing. So,
yeah.
That's... So not long, but just enough to warm me up and get my body going.
Yeah, I think that's funny too, because like people always think you were like antisocial because you didn't like hang out around the tennis a lot. And I think that they probably misunderstood that you had reasons for that. You know, you didn't want to just be there sitting there all day. Like you said, get flat. You know, you wanted to almost be excited when you got there to get there and play your match or to practice or whatever you were doing there, not just, you know, be sitting there around all day.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some guys who are locker room rats. And they loved it. They loved hanging around there all day and being a part of it. They could figure out something to do, whether, go and get something to eat or whatever they could do to waste some time. That wasn't me. You're right. And you said that very eloquently, Brett, that I was not antisocial. Mm-hmm. You said that very well. Thank you for saying that.
Nice. All right, this was a one that came up a few times. Dave Marshall and Brad Smith, amongst other people, asked essentially about these new ATP doubles changes. Have you heard about this? I know I talked to you about it a little, but let me go over it real quick. In Madrid, they're looking to like try and mix, you know, spice it up or test out some new stuff with doubles, because like, you know, everybody knows most people who play tennis actually play doubles. You know, people who are club players or go up to the courts or whatever, or play with their friends, it makes it more social. You have more people to play with and you know, it's not as much court to cover as you get older or whatever it is. Most people like to watch singles, and especially when, you know, most of the singles players don't play doubles, except for maybe a few events a year here and there. You know, obviously there's great doubles players, but if the best overall tennis players, quote unquote, aren't playing, it might not draw as much attention. So they're looking to try and spice it up, try some new stuff. Here's what they're looking to do in Madrid as like a trial run. They're looking to include 15-second serve clocks instead of the 25 now, and then reserving spots in the draw for teams to use teams to enter tournaments using their singles rankings. So essentially saying like, hey, if you're like a top whatever guy, I don't know what the parameters are yet, but if you're a top whatever and you decide you want to play doubles, we have these spots, you know, saved. You know, I don't know if it's maybe so that at the last minute if they want to join or whatever it is, but they're going to keep it for them. What is the other thing? Oh yeah, quicker change.
I think that, just to interrupt. I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, you like that?
Get some big name singles players in there. It would only draw more attention to the doubles. I think that wouldn't be bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 15 seconds in between serves. I don't get how that creates any more excitement. You know, all it does is move it along a little quicker.
Yeah, that one's funny to me too, because like doubles points are already so quick. You know, like they're not playing like these long rallies. They're usually probably average 3 or 4 hits even. You know, it's a quick volley or a poach a lot of times. And maybe that's just to make sure the matches don't last as long, because sometimes we'll be waiting there for a singles match and the doubles match hasn't ended. So we'll come on air. Right. We either have to like fill or go to the doubles match and do it until they get out there. What's the other thing? Yeah, quicker changeovers. Streamlining the schedule to 5 days during the second week of the tournament, meaning like, you know, condensing it to, you know, when there's less matches going on, then it kind of makes it so, you know, hey, there's only a few singles matches today, but we got these doubles too. And then I kind of like this one, unrestricted fan movement during play. What do you think about that? Would you be pissed? Were you mad at like people walking around in the crowd? I feel like you'd be someone who liked that atmosphere of kind of more rowdy,
yeah,
more
I
action.
Mean, that's the way the U.S. Open used to be. You know, where we had airplanes flying over and, you know, people moving in and out. And, you know, to me, I mean, you know, the more noise, the more commotion, you know, the better. I like that, you know, and that didn't really affect me. And if I had to let off some steam, I'd find somebody to let off some steam on and kind of move on. But I don't think that ever, you know, especially now, it seems that, you know, the courts have moved a little bit, the fans have moved a little further away from the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not as on top of the court as they used to be. I might be wrong with that, but you know, certainly, you know, at the U.S. Open, that main court there seems where the fans are
Arthur Ashe.
Further away. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. They're really far away on Arthur Ashe. And then you miss like the old grandstand. Remember the old grandstand at the U.S. Open where you could like literally, there was that walkway in between the stadium and the grandstand and you could be overhead and you could literally like peer over the like the railing and watch the players below. It was actually one of the coolest like kind of tennis experiences like ever back in the day, you know, from a fan standpoint.
Yeah, that used to be a good little grandstand court over there. It held about, I think, 4,000 or 5,000 people, but it was a great atmosphere.
Right.
Some of the rules I don't see, you know, the difference, you know, the changeovers quicker or whatever, unless they just, you know, want to move it along. You know, if they want to move it along, you know, just, you know, why don't you play, you know, no ad system,
Well, they do. A lot of tournaments, they do that. It is a no ad. Yeah. So like it's a, you know, the returner gets to choose what side and then, you know, they play 1 point for the game.
Right. You know, be honest with you, Brett, you know, I follow the singles. You know, I played a little bit of doubles back in the day. I don't follow much of the doubles. I hate to, you know, throw that out and be brutally honest, but I don't.
Right. All right. You know what? We don't have to go too much deeper tonight. Is there anything you want to, you know what I saw the other day? This guy, they put up a graphic and it was because we're going into clay court season and it was, you know, every country's top clay court wins list of like the player who leads. And do you know who number one is, American?
No.
One Mr. Edward Dibbs.
Oh.
Dibbsy leads all time with like 300 and something all-time clay wins. It's crazy.
I can believe that.
Yep, I can too.
I can believe that. He was, Eddie Dibbs. I grew up playing with Eddie from when I was like 7, 8 years old down at the Orange Bowl. He was from Miami Beach and... We'd become friends way back then, and you know his game was well suited for the clay. He was brought up in Miami on the clay courts down there, and you know he loved going and you know playing in Europe and playing on the clay, and even in the States when most of the tournaments during the summer right after Wimbledon went from grass to clay. different clay than Europe. It's the red clay in Europe, and it was called, I think, Rubico back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was he was a human backboard. I mean, he moved well. He wasn't big, but he could mix up his shots and move you around the court and wear you out. So I can believe that his game was well suited for clay. And you know, to be honest with you, Brett, he deserves that. I mean, he was a grinder, and I liked playing against him because of that. And having him number one at the top, he deserves it.
Yep, I agree. Here's a general one that's just probably an easy answer for you. But Magnus Romquist asks, what's the biggest change in tennis since your heyday? He says courts, balls, racket, string, courts, physio, team, all that stuff. I'm sure you can kind of say it pretty easily, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think the biggest, big change is, you know, the size of the players now. Back in the day, in my day, most all the best players were 6 foot or under. Mm-hmm. Now that if you're not 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", you're not competing. And then along with the equipment, the oversized rackets and as light as they are with the strings and the strength of the players, that's just made for a totally different game, a power game.
Right.
Before it was, you're playing against guys who, were baseliners or serving volleyers or guys that, were trying to mix it up or guys that knew how to sneak in and trying to mix up the game and use the angles and the length of the court. Now the guys are, with the equipment and their strength, they just, they stay back most of the time and just, bang away. And seems that, whoever wins is just the one who's doing it better that day.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's different, traveling with, teams of a coach and a physio and a psychiatrist and
nutritionist and everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's, the opportunities, for the players, men and women, to take advantage of. If you don't take advantage of it, then it's your fault, because everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the biggest change that I see. The courts have changed. Obviously, the grass courts are totally different. We used to play indoors on a carpet, and that's no more. A lot of things have changed, but that's the way of the game. We didn't have a roof on Wimbledon or the U.S. Open either.
Mm-hmm.
back then. So, right. If it rained there, you might have a three-day match that you'd have to play. a lot of things have changed, and I'm old school. I liked it back then. I liked, having a match that went over 3 days because you had to get up. You walked off the court, then you had to figure out a way when you walked back on to get up to be able to play again. Then it rained again. Then it's an overnight. Now it's all business now.
Mm-hmm.
They move those matches along, and
it's for
TV.
That's
why they have the room.
You got TV. Yep. You got to make sure you get it in, and all these like obligations and stuff like that are even like beyond the tennis in a way.
Big business.
Yep. How about this? Talk to me. You wanted to talk about this before we came on, and then I'll say one more thing, and then we'll wrap for the night. Talk to me about the tournaments going on right now. We got the men and the women's tournaments, NCAA basketball. I'm not as following it as much as I used to, but you wanted to talk a little about it. What's going on?
Yeah, I was watching the women. I was watching Iowa play UConn because they had a couple really, really great players on the team on Iowa. You hear about
Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark, and what she's been doing, but since I came on doing this with you, Brett, I taped it, so that I can watch the end of it. So I don't know who won that game, but isn't it amazing that UConn is in the Final Four, the men's and the women's?
Right.
So
pretty good program there.
Their program has got to be amazing, and Wow. Well, what excitement! I saw today that that the tickets for tonight's game between UConn and Iowa were selling for $2,000 a wow. seat. That's so crazy. That's pretty darn good. I was happy to see that.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool to see the excitement and attention Caitlin Clark has brought to the women's sport. And, you know, like most, the men's game is usually really popular, but it's fun to see it like have to take a back seat a little bit to the women. I've seen them be the lead story a lot. And, you know, Caitlin Clark can ball it up. I'm not going to ruin it for you. I'm looking at the score right now. I think you're going to have fun either way. It looks like it was a fun last half of the game. I'm not going to say a word. But I think you'll have fun watching it one way or the other.
I want to get to it.
Okay, here's one last thing. Sad story this week. Wanted to talk about, just because I know you knew him a little bit, obviously, seeing him on tour all the time. Tennis photographer Mel DiGiacomo passed away recently.
Oh, I saw that. Yes, I did. Yeah he was a good friend, Brett, back in the day. I spent a lot of time with Mel. And you know, every time you go to a tournament, you know, seeing him around and, you know, the job that he did and the pictures that he took he just became, you know, one of the main faces of every tournament. Time goes on. Time has passed for all of us. And I saw that he had passed, and I was sad to see that. He was a friend, and I haven't seen him for many years since you know I'd gotten away from tennis I was sad to see that.
Yeah his service was today on the East Coast, I think in New Jersey. I remember seeing him on tour a lot, and also when I got into photography about 10, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was, and started taking pictures and putting them up and thinking I like knew what I was doing or something. And he would send me notes and comments and, you know, send me little messages giving me encouragement and positive notes on, you know, what I was doing, and was happy that I got into, you know, photography a little bit and always appreciated that from him, just because, you know, when you look at his stuff, he's got so many great moments captured, you know, like back in the locker room with you and Mac and Borg, just sitting there on the, like, you know, massage tables waiting to do something, or, you know, this moment at the US Open or here or whatever it is. You know, you don't think about those people, you know, if you don't follow the tour, but they're the people they're just on the tour just as much as you are, you know, and they're at every stop, and they're the ones, you know, taking the pictures and writing the stories and doing all the things that contribute to the tour just as much as the players do in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, they helped make us who we were, you know, by taking those pictures and getting the pictures out and promoting and marketing, you know, not only tennis, but you know, us, the players, you know, it's pretty, you know, all that kind of fit into, you know, to one glass. I mean, you know, the way tennis grew and who helped do it, you know, from the photographers to the players to, you know, anybody and everybody, you know, all the volunteers and, you know, all made, you know, tennis back then what it had become, what it has become now, you know, by getting involved and being a part of it and wanting it to grow and, you know, helping to bring in TV and sponsors and bigger stadiums and all that. So, yeah, I mean, he was a major part of, you know, making a lot of guys famous, me included. And, you can't say any more than that. Pretty special guy.
Yep. Yeah. Just wanted to speak a little bit about him and say condolences to his family and rest in peace.
Well, I've enjoyed this with you, Brett. This time has gone fast too. And you know, you can always follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, at Brett_Connors on Twitter, at ADV Connors. Get our podcast, follow us, and give Bella a hug for me. And I will be talking to you soon, as always.
That sounds good. Yeah, leave us a review, 5-star review. We normally come out Fridays, but this one will come out Saturday. Thanks for your patience this week, and we'll check in with you all next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.